I'm curious, can y'all hear my chair squeaking in the background?
Oh, I thought that was my chair.
It's driving me crazy.
I heard like a chair squeaking, but I'm fairly convinced that it's my one.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. When we last spoke, Bayern Munich had just wrapped up a transfer for Dutchman Matthijs de Ligt, and since then, the club has officially announced de Ligt's signature, finished its preseason tour of the United States, and added French wonderkid Matisse Tell as an attacking option for Julian Nagelsmann, who has just a few days left to decide on his tactical approach for Saturday's Super Cup clash against his former club, RB Leipzig. Well, I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about all of that with my friends Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Yeah, like I said, since our last episode, just a little bit over a week ago, a lot has happened for Bayern Munich, and we're slowly approaching the season. As a matter of fact, it kicks off in just a few days when Bayern Munich face RB Leipzig in the German Super Cup clash. And before we get to the discussion about that game, I want to talk about Matisse Tell. The 17-year-old has officially joined Bayern Munich from Stade Rennais. He's a player who we've talked about a little bit, you know, someone that we didn't really know just a couple months ago. If you would have said that name to any of us, it probably wouldn't have meant anything. But he's someone who is, you know, universally praised by football scouts. He's even drawn comparisons to Kylian Mbappe, which is, you know, no small praise right there. And the transfer fee is a bit unclear. You know, the reports have suggested anywhere from as low as 15 million guaranteed, up to 20 million guaranteed, as well as some add-ons. And so maybe not quite as steep as some reports had previously been suggesting, but it is a pretty significant fee for a player who hasn't even played a full match at the senior level. And so, Tim, when we talk about Tell, you know, a really inexperienced player, but also someone that if you ask any football scout, anyone who has knowledge about the player, you know, is this kid going to become big, you're going to get a unanimous yes. Do you think the fee is too high for someone like him, or do you think that this is an appropriate level of risk for a 17-year-old potentially future, you know, Ballon d'Or winner?
Yeah, it's kind of a complicated one. I think there's the element of the price of a player. It's more looking at it past the idea of him being a footballer, but rather the idea that you can kind of purchase like a 17-year-old and kind of like uproot this guy's entire life and family for however much. There was a thing with Bayern a few months ago. They were, I can't remember the exact details of it, but I remember they had spent like a fair bit of money on maybe somebody from like the under 15s. Like it's very, very young. It's very young, but that's kind of the way that football's going at the moment. And like, if it's kind of getting to this point where if you're not nominated for the Ballon d'Or by the time you're 22, you can kind of kiss goodbye your whole career or away. Like you're kind of like written off as a flop. So I guess like it was only a matter of time before somebody that was 18 years old went for 50 million or 17 years old went for 15 to 20 to 30 million or however much it is. I think the fee is a lot. And the more I think about it, the more I come to the conclusion that chances are Bayern probably know what they're doing. I think this is a team that for the longest time have been quite frugal with a lot of their transfer activity. Okay, you had like the odd anomaly here of, you know, Lucas Hernandez was 80 million, Leroy Sané 50 something. And then even kind of before that, you had guys like Mario Götze. But even then, kind of at that time, Mario Götze for that sort of money kind of made a lot of sense. In the same way that somebody like Renato Sanchez going for that sort of money, I think he was about 30, 35, that kind of made a lot of sense. There was a lot of hype around them and they have gone on to do different things in their career. So I can't help but feel that Bayern would look at him and they would have like a top limit to say, we won't spend more than this. And as it turns out, that limit wasn't met. because Bayern paid what was asked for him. So I guess, like, in many ways, the fee is, like, it is a lot, but if Bayern believe that it's, that he's worth a penny, that if he's worth every penny spent, then that's just what the situation is. For me personally, the idea of spending, you know, 15, 20, 30, however much it is, on somebody that hasn't played like a full 90 minutes of senior football, that's a very weird thing to happen. I kind of half expect it from Real Madrid when they bought Vinicius Jr. for I think it was about double that amount. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he had played a full senior game for Flamengo. I think, was it Flamengo that he was playing for?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a transfer that eventually worked out for them. And you just have to look at what he was doing last season to see that you make a sizable investment for something that's going to pay off down the line. There's a chance that this could be like our version of the Vinicius transfer. And if that is the case, then I'm all for it. But that is, there is like the human element of it that is quite odd to me.
Yeah, I think you used a key word there, that is investment. And it is weird to talk about a human being, an individual, a 17-year-old kid, as an investment. But I think you bring up a good point. You know, Vinicius Jr., I believe Real Madrid paid up to 40 million euros for him, you know, when he had barely featured or maybe even not even featured for Flamengo's first team in Brazil. I also think of Jadon Sancho. Borussia Dortmund paid more money for Sancho coming from Manchester City's under 17 or under 21, whichever squad it was. And it turned out well for them. They not only made their money back, but got a lot more. And I'm not saying that to suggest that we only want to get our money out of Tell. I'm saying that if you have someone who knows what they're doing and is doing their job right, then this could be almost looked at as a bargain in several years' time. And so the fundamental question is then, okay, do we trust the guys who are doing their job? Do we trust that, you know, Brazzo or Nepa, whoever, has done their research, and that this player will come good? And so, Sebastian, maybe you can, you know, give your thoughts on the fee and talk about, you know, the trust. Do you trust Brazzo? But also, what do you expect? You know, how much do we expect for him to feature in his first season? Or maybe even, what are some realistic expectations that you think fans should be holding Matthijs Tel to just for this first season?
First, I guess I will start and say, of course, he would be happy if this fee would be a bit lower. But on the other hand, if you're really convinced of that guy, this is definitely an amount of money that you can put towards something like this, especially if it's true. And like maybe 50% of this is kind of add-ons. Like if we're really below like 20 million, maybe 15 or even only 12 million guaranteed, basically. Well, this makes this definitely look a bit different than it seemed to be a couple of days or a week or 2 weeks ago, the numbers we were talking then. When we're talking about expectations here, what has been interesting was listening to Nagelsmann's expectations for him. And I think he said he's going to be happy if he scores 10 goals in his first season. Which is a lot for such a young guy, to mm-hmm. be very honest, right? I mean, getting a 17-year-old in and say, well, okay, I'll be happy if he scores 10 goals. Wow, that just goes a long way in showing that there really is a lot of trust there. Because to have a kind of reasonable expectation of scoring this many goals, he first has to play a lot and then he has to play well. This would be huge, I think, if he actually gets to score close to 10 goals even. This would be really a big deal. And I think we wouldn't have to be sad or anything if he just scores like maybe 2 goals in this season. This could still be our striker of the future, even if he doesn't score any goals this season, honestly. But yeah, with Salihamidzic and the club basically seeming to be very sure that they wanted him, and also, well, kind of happy with not getting a kind of higher tier number 9 in, like an actual number 9 if we ignore Xerxes for the moment. I mean, if you kind of would have to rank the number 9, the actual number 9 guys that we have on the squad right now, it would probably be Xerxes number 1, Choupo-Moting number 2, and then Tell number 3. But yeah, the whole question, the big question basically used to be, are we getting another number 9 in? And it really doesn't seem like we do. And this is also, for me, that means there's a lot of trust here. And I don't think that trust is in Joshua Xerxes. I think this trust is in Matisse Till. So yeah, this also, if I take this together, the amount of money they're putting in, that we're not getting a bigger kind of, like, in terms of a bigger name striker. And then this comment by Nagelsmann, if you take all these three together, this means they are really convinced and the scouts must be kind of, like, crazy about this guy. Sadly, there's not much material on him out there. I was trying to get to see more of him. There are some highlight reels out there, but I would really like to know more about him. It's a shame that we couldn't see him in the game so far. So it would be really nice if he would get a shot, like, at the end of the week or something like that. That would be really great, but yeah, I don't know if this is too early for him, but I'm really curious to see what he can actually do, what he can do at this club in this system.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very curious.
Like with all of the transfers that Bayern have completed this summer, you know, they've all said once Bayern came knocking, it really wasn't a question of what my future holds anymore. That was it. And it seemed to be the case again with Tell. You know, once Bayern came for Tell, there was never another option. And I think part of that was that Bayern came to Tell and told him, hey, we're not signing, you know, another big number 9. We've got Sadio Mane coming in, but Lewandowski's gone. We're going to need someone who can play up top. We're not signing anyone else. Can you come in and can you play for us? And I think you're right. I think that he's already probably in the pecking order above Joshua Xerxes. At least I think that Tell, we hope, the Nagelsmann and Bratzo, at least they hope that he's going to be able to produce over Joshua Xerxes, so I'm not sure what that means for him. But Tim, do you think that this leaves Bayern's attack well stacked enough? Do you think that we have enough attacking options going forward, you know, with the decision that we won't be signing a big number 9 this season? And do you think that this is probably the last move coming into Bayern, or do you think that the Laimer deal, for example, is still going to get over the line? And do you think maybe we even see another sort of surprise transfer?
I think the attack is probably about as potent as it can get at this point. I think the Mane transfer is really, really fantastic. And also getting the Serge Gnabry's extension sorted out as well. I think, like, that couldn't have been... I think that's a really good sign that what Nagelsmann wants to do is something that Bayern haven't necessarily seen before, because we've always had, like, the guy in the middle, whereas watching the games in preseason really showed that these were the guys that were in the middle, but then at one point they wouldn't be in the middle, they'd be out wide, and then somebody else would be in the middle. I'm really looking forward to seeing that sort of fluidity, because it's gonna mean that guys like Gnabry and Mane and Sané and Coman, and also, as well as that, Choupo-Moting, I think, is likely to have, a bit of a role in this. I think he's been played as, like, a very wide target man a couple of times. I think it's still really good to have him in the squad. I think he's probably going to get a little bit forgotten about, because obviously Tell coming in, it's a big money signing. He's young. He's, like, got, like, all of this praise behind him. And so there's going to be a lot of pressure there. But I think with that, it's very easy to forget that Choupo-Moting has been, like, a reliable guy. And so I think it, even having him in the squad is just as important. Saying that, I would probably prefer maybe somebody that... I don't really know the best way of describing it. This sounds so unfair, because I think he did really well when he was called upon a couple of seasons ago. But I'd prefer to have somebody that was maybe, like, a step or two above Choupo-Moting. But saying that, I'm very happy that he's there. So in that sense, I think the attack is going to be is about as good as it could possibly get at this point. In terms of new signings, I can maybe imagine that the Konrad Laimer deal would be the last one. I don't know if that's going to get confirmed before the game against Leipzig at the weekend. If it isn't, then that's going to make for some very interesting television. I would much, again, like if that happens, that's fine. But I would rather have an actual dedicated defensive midfielder. I think that what Laimer can do is something that Bayern don't necessarily have readily available. I think he's not necessarily an upgrade in from Goretzka, but I think what he does upgrade is availability. So in terms of like immediate availability, obviously he was out injured for a very long time. I think 2 seasons ago. I think that would be like that would probably be the final transfer that Bayern get done. And if it happens, fantastic. I feel he's the sort of guy that is just reliable. Like he's never going to give you like a 10 out of 10, but he's never going to give you less than like a 6.5. And I think that's like good squads are made up of guys like him. And I guess like people like Sebastian Rudy as well, or even somebody like Mark Rocker, who I feel like Bayern could certainly use in their squad at this point. You need somebody that is just prepared to do the dirty work. And if that's what Nagelsmann sees Laimer as, somebody capable of doing that, fantastic. He clearly knows him better than I do. And he's going to be the person that's coaching him. So I won't have to take any blame if things don't go, well. Mm-hmm. In terms of like outgoing transfers, we got Chris Richards that got confirmed about an hour ago. I think if there was anything else, maybe Nianzou goes out on loan or potentially Pavard gets sold because Chelsea are getting desperate. And I just want to take this moment to say, any time you can witness Chelsea fail to do something, you need to take that opportunity as quickly as possible, because it's such a wonderful thing to see such an awful football club like that just be brought down a peg or two. But granted, I've got my own personal bias against that, but I won't start a brand new podcast all about bad mouthing Chelsea, but I'm happy to take any opportunity to do so.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the game on Saturday. You talked about it briefly, because you know if that Laimer transfer isn't confirmed before then, it'd be interesting to see if he does play. If he doesn't play, maybe that'll give us some hints about his future. But I don't want to talk about RB Leipzig and who will and won't be playing for them. I do want to talk about that for Bayern though, because we did see two different systems used by Nagelsmann in Bayern's preseason. The first was a very interesting 4-2-2-2 system. It's almost like a 4-4-2 in a way, against DC United. And then against Manchester City, in that really disjointed game, Bayern reverted back to the kind of 3-4-3-ish type of approach. And so, Sebastian, based on what you saw in the preseason, or the preseason was kind of short, so maybe not even only based on that, which lineup do you expect Nagelsmann to go with on Saturday? Do you expect the back four system, back to the back three? You know, why do you expect that? And then I also want to hear, you know, who do you expect to be, you know, who's the starting 11 on the pitch? Specifically questions like, you know, who's playing beside Kimmich with Goretzka injured? Has Sabitzer earned it? Does De Ligt walk straight into the starting 11? There's only so many spots in attack. Who fills those out? So what is your system and your 11 for Saturday against Leipzig?
Yeah, so I feel like what Nagelsmann probably wants to play now this season, I feel, is probably the 4-2-2-2. I think that's the system he wants to go for. And I think the 3-4-3 is basically maybe the first thing he would do in a game where he feels like we need to one more defender back there. I think that's probably what we're going for. Also kind of the fallback option, if he feels like the 4-2-2-2 hasn't been implemented well enough yet. So I think he's probably going for the 4-2-2-2. At least that's what I expect to see, because I think that's the football he's going to try and play. So that's that expectation. And then if we have a bit of a closer look at the lineup, I think, well, goal is obvious. So we don't have to talk about that much. That's going to be Manuel Neuer. Then if we talk about the fullbacks, I think the fullbacks are also kind of not much of a debate. We're surely going to see Alphonso Davies and Mesrawy. I think this is pretty clear. More interesting are the center back positions. And I would think that De Ligt is probably going to get the start. I'm not 100% convinced who's going to be the other guy, because I'm not quite sure Hernandez has shown us enough right now. I would have gone with Hernandez to begin with, I think. At the beginning, basically, of the offseason, Hernandez was my favorite to start as the left center back. But I could see Upamecano there, but I guess I will stick with Hernandez for the moment. If we then look at the central midfield, so at the first two of those three twos we have there, the big question becomes who's going to play next to Joshua Kimmich, because Kimmich is pretty clearly going to start. It is an interesting situation here, because I think both the other guys who are the most likely to play there have looked really good, right? So Gravenberch and Sabitzer both have been doing really well in this preseason. I think if it were my choice, I would probably go with Gravenberch here, because I think he has shown some things that I really, really liked. Sabitzer has played well, but Gravenberch is more the guy who has shown the things I'm looking for. He has shown a very good awareness of space. He has shown that he can pass the ball really well. And I think that's really nice there. I would really like that, because I can see him more than I can see Sabitzer in that position, where he is at least doing as much of the defensive work as Kimmich is doing. That would be great. I think that would help our game. So I would go with Gravenberch here, and I think it's at least 50-50 that that Nagelsmann is going to see that kind of similarly. Then the next position that's kind of interesting is the second two in this three of these three twos. We have only very recently found out that Kingsley Coman is going to be allowed to play. Which was in doubt because of a red card he got. But yeah, he is going to be allowed to play, and that could be a very realistic option. I think what I would like to see is I would really like us to go without like an actual typical winger there. I would really be interested to see Müller and Musiala, but I don't think we're going to see that. We have not seen so much of Musiala in the preseason, so I think he's probably not going to be our starter. I think it is more likely that we get Kingsley Coman there and Thomas Müller. Then the interesting question becomes who's going to be on which side. I would say it's probably more likely that Kingsley Coman is going to go to the left side. I'm not sure that I prefer that, but I think that's the more likely variant. And then when we're looking at our two strikers, at our striker pairing there, I think that's, again, rather boring. I think it's it has become relatively clear that Nagelsmann sees Mane and Gnabry as his first choices at striker, at least before Tell came in. And I don't think he's ready to start, and I don't think he's going to start right away. So I think that's the lineup I'm expecting there. And I like it. I agree that the 4-2-2-2 can be very exciting, although I'm also a big fan of the 3-4-3 system we have been playing. But I think it's probably the way to go, just because these two strikers are so exciting, and I think it's the best lineup we can have that gives us two strikers up front.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that the two strikers have become a bit more necessary, may not be the right word, but it's the one I'm going to use, maybe a bit more necessary with Lewandowski gone. So I would agree. I think that the 4-2-2-2, that's what I'm going to call it, I think that it is probably the best option. I think that's what we'll see. I think we'll see I think your front four is right. That's what we will see. I might would make the argument that you could drop Mueller, but I don't know if that's a conversation we should have right now. But I think Coman, undroppable, the top two is correct. I think Sabitzer will start over Gravenberg. Not necessarily because that's what I want. That's just what I expect. Nagelsmann has specifically called out Sabitzer a couple times, saying he's having a really good preseason. I think he rewards him with a start. And then I don't think De Ligt will start. I think we're going to see Lucas Hernandez and Dayot Upamecano as the center-back partnership, if not only because, you know, Upamecano and even Hernandez to an extent have both played a lot against Leipzig and know the Leipzig system. So I think that's who I would see, just those two small changes. So, Tim, any thoughts on the 11? Do you think we're more likely to see that 3-4-3? What are your thoughts here?
Well, I guess this is, I don't want to say it's like a glorified friendly. I used to describe it as the Marco Reus Invitational, because it was always like, I'll Bayern win the league and the cup. And so just kind of by default, Dortmund take over. But yeah, I don't think this is like the biggest game of Nagelsmann's career by any means. But at the same time, I can't really recall a manager having this sort of investment. So he kind of does really need to prove something. I can fully envisage at some point both of these formations being used. I think if he was to start, I could probably see that 4-2-2 as you called it. I quite like that, actually. I can fully envisage that that being what he starts with. But judging purely from like preseason form, I think Upamecano is probably the my centre back pairing would be De Ligt and Upamecano. I think De Ligt showed just instantly that he doesn't really need much in the way of like preparation. When I was watching him play, I was like, this is just like when Xabi Alonso joined Bayern, where he joined and then 2 days later, it was as if he'd been at Bayern for years now. I think De Ligt is, if he's fit, then yeah, I can fully imagine that he would start. And I guess like in midfield, I would love to see, this is there's two very contentious decisions. I don't think Kimmich did at all well in preseason. I think he throws himself around a lot, and I think you kind of want that in a player, but it's become very apparent sometimes that just isn't really enough at points. And so he was kind of found out quite a lot, in particular against Kevin De Bruyne. And I think that's kind of fine because it's Kevin De Bruyne and you can kind of make an exception there. But if I had to pick like two midfielders to start, it would be Gravenberch, who I think did really, really well. Again, another player that looked really, really comfortable. And that guy again, Marcel Sabitzer. And I think Sabitzer would probably start regardless, regardless of who the other person is, whether it is Gravenberch or Kimmich. It's probably almost definitely going to be Kimmich, because he did a really, really great job. Even against Man City, there were a couple of points where he was just making like all the right decisions. He like really controlled the game at points. It was great to see. The second contentious issue that I would probably bring up, I'm not entirely confident that Müller did much to warrant starting, but again, it's pre-season, very difficult conditions, and it in like the a slightly closer to like home field advantage, maybe he'll do better. I guess if like the second set of two are slightly more central, then that probably fits him quite well. It gives Mazraoui an opportunity to get forward, then you kind of have the width and the pace there. But yeah, as a whole, I wasn't overly impressed with how Müller played in preseason or Kimmich, which is a shame because those are normally, I think any other time, those would be two of the first names on the team sheet. But otherwise, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. But I can fully imagine Nagelsmann using both the 4-2-2 and 3-4-3.
I think that's actually pretty good observation, pretty good, I guess, thinking that it's more likely that we see a little bit of both. But talking about, you know, Kimmich and talking about Mueller and being a little bit disappointed in them, especially in comparison to you know, Upamecano and Sabitzer, who are now starting to look, you know, what I would say really good with a year under their belt. I want to have the conversation about who do you expect, or maybe who do you think has a little bit more pressure on their shoulders heading into this season, right? Who has something to prove heading into this new season? And maybe even another question on top of that, you know, who do you expect to step up their game significantly, right? So two questions. Who really needs a good season, right? Who's under pressure? They have to perform. And then flip side, who do you expect to have a good season? Expect to look back in, you know, next May, next June and be like, yeah, you know, this guy was the MVP, the most improved, whatever it may be. And you'll be thinking, I'm not, you know, totally surprised by that. So whether they're the same person, someone different. But I'll go ahead. I have some ideas, but I'll start with you, Sebastian. Who do you see Phillies, you know, stepping into those roles?
So first, when we talk about who really needs a good season, I think Sané is a name I have to bring up again. I know you guys are a bit more enthusiastic about him, but probably you're also not very enthusiastic right now.
No, I'm with you here. I'm with you.
Good. I think he really needs to show that he can bring something to this team that is kind of comparable to what Kingsley Coman is doing for us, and he hasn't really recently. Otherwise, people are. This is going to be the story of how he came to Bayern, and everybody thought it's going to be great, and it never was, and that would be a huge shame. Also, I think this applies to most of our center backs. I think Hernandez, Upamecano, Pavard specifically, well, if they are not doing well this season, one or two of them are going to be gone probably. So I would see a lot of pressure there. So that would be my answer to the first question. If we're talking about who's very likely to improve a lot, who's going to have kind of a breakout season or whatever, I think one candidate for me actually is Stanisic. I think it's not unlikely that he gets a couple of more minutes than you would think, because either one of our fullbacks might be gone for a time due to injury, due to whatever. I could see that, and I'm just ready to trust him when he's on the field. And I think Nagelsmann might very well see that a bit, or even a bit more himself. And yeah, this is what you want from a defensive player, right? The first thing you want from a defensive player is, yeah, that he's going to be a safe pair of hands, that he's not going to do anything outrageously bad or something like that. And I think that's definitely how I see Josip Stanisic. I think he can get a lot of opportunities, actually, even if we have new players on our defense there. He can play all positions on this back line, basically, and that's a good situation for him, I would say. Then the other ones are a bit harder to say. I think there's an argument to be made for Serge Gnabry, actually. If he shows that he can score 20 goals plus or something like that, I think that's going to mean a lot. I think he would be seen somewhat differently than he has been. He would be a definite starter for the national team, so that would also be very helpful for him there. And I think a lot of people don't see him do that. I think a lot of people are very skeptical that he can pull that off. More of the spotlight is probably on Sadio Mane up front. But I think Gnabry is more of a starter than he has been recently right now. And he can maybe take real advantage of this. That would be very, very interesting.
Tim, go ahead. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'm very much with Sebastian. I think this is a big moment for Leroy Sané. And I don't even think that he has to kind of prove that he's a good player, because he's done it. Like he was player of the month like 3 months in a row last year, and so he's clearly good enough. I think there's, and well, it was the switch to the left wing that really kind of like changed something in him. And it's incredible that it was something as small, but I guess as significant as that, that made him kind of do this complete 180, because it was almost overnight. But then it was when he had to go back to the right wing, when Davies got injured and Coman like really stepped up as that left wing back role. That's kind of when things stopped working. I think there's clearly a player there that is very, very good, and potentially, maybe not so much with Mane now, but there's a guy there that could have been Bayern's best winger by some distance. I think Serge Gnabry's often been criticised for like his inconsistency. Same goes for Kingsley Coman. Sané could have been that guy. And, you know, at times he hasn't been inconsistent. But like that's the problem, is that this is going to be his third season, I think. And he needs to, if he can stay on the left wing, I think everything will kind of be okay. Because there were moments during the Man City game, again, like the difficult conditions of that, with it being so stop-start and like ridiculous amounts of rain, it's kind of hard to like look at the negatives and like focus too much on them. I think you can look at the positives and say, okay, this was good. The negatives, I think it's kind of easy to just kind of like push those to the side. But when he got angry and when he was like really fighting, that's what I wanted more of. Because it reminded me of Ribéry and Robin when they had that fire in them. It didn't matter whether or not they were scoring or getting assists, but they were just desperate to get involved and win the ball back for the team. And I do think he has that capacity within himself as a player. And so I'd love to see more than that. More of that. Again, I don't think he's somebody that has to score or get an assist every single game. But I would love to see him playing comfortably and playing confidently and linking up with everybody around him. I think somebody like Mane coming into the side is going to be a really good thing for Sané as well. I'm expecting, I think this is like a big pressure moment for him. So I'm expecting him to fully deliver on that. Elsewhere, I think like there's all the discussion of like, oh, this is going to be Benjamin Pavard's season to like really step up. And I think I said to you guys, like, why now? Like, why wasn't he doing that before? Because Philipp Lahm showed that you can be a leader from right back. Why wasn't Pavard that kind of like certainty in defence? Why wasn't he the guy that was displaying that leadership that apparently De Ligt has been showing in training, despite the fact that he's only been there 10 minutes? I think if Pavard stays, this is going to be a very big season for him, because I think he's another guy. I actually received a bit of criticism for this, saying that he was inconsistent as well, because I think like his first season was fine. It's not what I wanted, but it worked. And then his second season was really bad, and then last season was kind of a bit of both. And I don't know, I think now that there's Mazraoui in the squad, and also as Sebastian said, Stanisic, I think Stanisic is a guy that I'm really, really looking forward to seeing more of, and I think that versatility is going to be big for the team. But I think the fact that Stanisic has showed that he has that composure and like, he has that intelligence to be able to play as a centre back, as a left back, or as a right back, he kind of can quite easily take on that role of like Pavard's versatile defender thing that he's got going on. And honestly, I'd prefer that. I would much rather see Stanisic as, you know, first reserve than Pavard, because I think he's young enough to have all of his career ahead of him, but he's shown enough to say this guy is very reliable. I think it's a big season for Pavard if he stays. As for people with high expectations, I think I'm really, really excited about Gravenberch. I think he could potentially, I'm very glad that Garrett isn't here, I think he could quite easily displace Goretzka in the starting 11. If the team is decided exclusively on quality of performance and like how well people are playing and how well they're training, I don't think Goretzka should have a guaranteed spot in the starting 11 just because he's no longer injured. I think he's going to have to work. I think he's going to have to work for it to get his role back. Because Gravenberch, everything that I've seen of him so far has been absolutely fantastic. So I'm really, really excited about that.
You're talking about Goretzka. He was one of my, I guess, maybe three names that I had in terms of players who, three or four, that are under heavy expectations. And I think I've talked on here before about my theory that, especially if Laimer comes in and Gravenberch has already come in and now Sabitzer's playing well, that Goretzka is someone who next summer could be on the selling block. But I would say there's a lot of pressure on Goretzka this year to not only, you know, prove that he's better than Gravenberch, that he's better than, you know, Sabitzer and worthy of starting, but you hate to discredit a player for this, but it's kind of how it is. He has to show that he can get his injuries under control, that he can be a reliable player for this team. And so I think Goretzka's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders. Y'all talked about Sané. That one, I think, is the most obvious right now. Sané is under a ton of pressure. I think he'd be under a lot more if it wasn't for the three-month period where he was Bayern's best player toward the beginning of last season. But we really need to see some consistency, some not necessarily effort. I think it's easy to look at the way he plays and say, oh, he's just not giving 100%. I don't think that's the case at all. But I don't want to beat a dead horse. I think Sané definitely has a lot of pressure. And then I think both Thomas Müller and Serge Gnabry in attack are under pressure. Gnabry, for obvious reasons, he just got the new contract. Lewandowski's gone. He's moving to the center. But especially Thomas Müller, with Robert Lewandowski gone, there are some questions. And we already talked about, you know, his place in the 11 a little bit, Tim. But there are some questions about, does he still have a place in this squad? Now, I say that as, you know, someone who, Thomas Müller is my favorite player ever. I fully expect that he'll rise to the occasion. I wouldn't even be surprised if he somehow manages to finish the season as the assist leader once again. But all that being said, he's definitely a player who is under pressure with Lewandowski gone. Now, as far as someone that I expect to step up their game significantly, I guess I'm probably going to have to go for the low-hanging fruit. With all eyes on Gnabry, Sané, Sadio Mane, the new transfer, I think that Jamal Musiala is just perfectly set up to come in and have a real, like, serious breakthrough season. I'm talking, like, prove that he is not only a future, you know, one of the best players in the world, but show that he's already, you know, near or at the level of being a world-class, you know, winger, attacking midfielder, whatever it is. And then Kingsley Coman as well. He's picked up right where he left off in preseason. I think he's undroppable. Right now, he's one of the first attacking names I would put down on the team sheet, if not the first attacking name. So I think Musiala and Coman are set up to where they could really have some significantly big seasons. So Tim, you talked about Gravenberch. Sebastian, I'm wondering, is there one of the new transfers that you have your eye on in particular? Someone that you're really going to, like, you're really excited, looking forward to watching? Obviously, I know you're excited about all of them, but does anyone stand out as one of the transfers you're most excited for this season?
Really a tough question because, I mean, it's easy to say. I'm excited about most guys we get in, but this year's, I mean, for everyone, this is, for every Bayern fan, this is a huge year in terms of transfers. But as you guys know, at least two of those players we got in were two guys I had been calling for years, basically, in De Ligt and Mazraoui. From those two, I would probably choose De Ligt, actually, because I feel like this could be the biggest change here that could really be huge for us if we really just manage to solve these defensive issues. But it's really hard to choose with these guys because there are just so many, and what they all have in common is that the ceiling of where this could be going is just very, very high. I feel it's not like these are just kind of very safe moves that help us, but don't have this huge ceiling. No, I think these could really all be difference makers. There's really a huge upside here. So it's really hard to not talk about all of these guys. But I guess I would then actually go with De Ligt because, as I said, shoring up this defense, this could just make such a big difference on all fronts, basically.
Now, Tim, I don't want to speak for you. I know you did talk about Gravenberch earlier, but is that the transfer that you have your eye, that you most have your eye on heading into this new season?
I guess like Mazraoui, because he is the first right back that we've had that has come in with like the intention of playing as a right back since, well, I guess like since Rafinha. Because like,
and Kimmich fills these huge shoes that Rafinha left behind, yeah, right?
Well, who could possibly do that? No, it's a very, very valid question. He is a transfer that kind of needed to happen many, many years ago. Because Pavard said that he wants to play in the center of defense. Kimmich has said like I'm a central midfielder. Like Rafinha was there. Like he was like, yeah, I'll be a right back. As was Lahm, like this is something that Bayern have not had for a very, very long time, and I think it's going to be really great to see just to see like what happens when Bayern want to attack down the right wing, because that is I think one of the biggest things that's hindered guys like Leroy Sané and Serge Gnabry when they've been playing on the right wing. Because they're not necessarily players that can make something for themselves in the same way that Kingsley Coman has that explosive pace and like that trickery. I think Sané obviously does have it, but not quite to the same extent. I think having Mazraoui could open up some really, really interesting attacking options on the right. So I'm really excited about, obviously Mane's going to be getting all of the headlines. I think Gravenberch like a really interesting one. De Ligt as well. Tell, you know, these are fantastic names that have come to the club this season. But Mazraoui is the one that, like, it's like finally we've got that guy.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't him, then you know I liked Odriozola, but that I'm very much in the minority here. I was just I'm happy to just have an actual right back that can contribute in the attacking phase as well.
Well, then I'll throw in Ryan Gravenberch for me, because I think that he's the prototype of the modern midfielder. He's big, he's tall, he's strong, but he is technically excellent. He's so good on the ball. If you haven't seen his, of course it was against DC United, but if you haven't seen his assist for Thomas Muller's goal in the friendly against DC United, you need to go check that out. The way he plays, it's just fun to watch, and it's also effective. And I think that, you know, you talked about this earlier, I think he could have a phenomenal partnership with Kimmich. So Gravenberch is probably the player that I would say that out of all the transfers, he's the one that I have my eye on this year. Now, of course, I'm very excited to see Sadio Mane. I'm really excited to see this new look Bayern attack. And I'm really looking forward to Saturday when we face RB Leipzig. Because it's football season again, and that's really exciting. But that's all the time that we have for this episode. If you've enjoyed listening, or if you are a regular fan of the pod and you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review, because we would greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, there are a couple ways that you can do that. You can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us over on Twitter at superbayernpod, where Garrett is putting in a lot of work, and you can keep up to date with us there. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, we're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.